Hi, everybody. This is Kimberly.
And this is Katie.
And you're listening to A Date with Dateline. This episode is called Mystery on the Mississippi. It is season 26, episode 2. Is it only episode 2?
It's only 2.
I don't know why I'm saying 2 like that. It aired on October. Is it October already?
It is. It's rough. I know. Let's move on. I don't want to discuss that. Yeah, it's upsetting.
October 6th, 2017, hosted by Dennis Murphy, who is enough.
Yes, he is.
And he proved it once again in this episode.
He was fantastic the entire episode.
Yeah, I do think he needs a haircut, though.
Is it between? Maybe it's between.
I think he's
right
between
now.
Haircuts, and it's right on the very end of where he needs to go.
Okay.
This episode took place in Quincy, Illinois. And it starts right off, with my OMG moment.
Does it really?
Yes, it does.
Okay, what?
Once again, I'm not going to try not to yell, because it's all in caps in my notes. Again with Mark Twain.
I knew it.
I cannot, okay?
It doesn't even need to be said. Why can't we just say it's by the Mississippi River? We don't have tons of episodes that take place around the Mississippi.
No.
Right?
So this time they say this area that gave us Mark Twain gave us another larger-than-life character. Last time it was the girl was sweet and a little salty, like a Mark Twain. You need to stop telling us where Mark Twain is from, because we don't care. And trying to somehow make it relevant to the episode, which it is never.
Also, because Mark Twain is not from this city.
No, just somewhere along the Mississippi.
He's within a 40-mile radius. Maybe he was born there. But this doesn't...
But it's kind of like the Alamo, where they're...
Yes, it is.
Have to reminding us that this is where the Alamo is. And then they show us B-roll of tourists going to visit the Alamo, so that we never forget the Alamo. Never forget Mark Twain is from.
What I'd like to do is put this on a bingo square and have one bingo square dedicated to the Alamo Mark Twain. And then there's going to be a third one. But if any of those three things are mentioned in the episode, maybe Shakespeare. They do a lot of sort of like a Shakespearean.
Right.
Yeah, they do a lot of referencing to Shakespeare as well. So maybe we can put Shakes on there.
I love it. So this episode is about Curtis. Now, this is going to be really hard for me, okay? I don't know how to say the last name. Sometimes they said Loveless, and sometimes they said Lovelace.
It's Lovelace.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% positive. Lovelace.
Because I think it's where you sometimes say, you know, better. You're not saying better. You're saying better. And I think sometimes people just pronounce it Loveless.
I think it's a pattern of speech thing, but it's definitely Lovelace. It's like Linda Lovelace, the deep throat lady.
Yeah,
deep throat. It sure is. Yeah.
Yeah, deep throat. We mm-hmm. went deep throating in this episode. I don't know.
You tried.
I tried something new there. Didn't work out. So Curtis Lovelace was an All-American football star, which Dateline once again thinks that we care about. He Corey start dating in college. Corey, they get married. Curtis was president of the school board, became like a big shot lawyer. They have 4 kids. And then we jump to Valentine's Day, and she is very, very sick. She's too sick to take the kids to school, so the dad does it, which is a really big deal because dads don't normally do mommy jobs, I guess. So I'm laughing at how stereotypical it all was.
It's pretty bad.
When he came home from dropping the kids off.
Wait, stop. She didn't work, though, right? She didn't have a job. Mom
she
was
had
her
job. A job at the very beginning. I believe they said she had a small job that supported them while he went through law school, I think.
That's right.
And but since people he on was Twitter were laughing because it was like, oh, she had a small job because she's a woman.
Oh.
People were mad.
Yeah, I'm mad now.
So he was only gone for an hour taking the kids to school. He comes home and she's in bed and she's dead. She was 38 years old. He says, I shook her. I called out her name. I did this. He's very methodical, but he is a lawyer, but he's extremely unemotional when he's talking about it. The detective right away thinks that her hands are positioned very strangely. That's the most important part of the whole case, is they're floating above her body, kind of, in rigor mortis. Very creepy. They're above her chest. So the detective finds alcohol by the bed. Turns out Corey and Curtis are big drinkers. And she had been drinking and falling down a lot. And she was also battling bulimia, which can cause you to just suddenly die. She also had a cut over her mouth and inside her mouth. I think it was above her lip.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. We'll
that could be it. Bulimia.
That's what my, yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
The cause of death turns out to be unknown. They do say she has a fatty liver from all the drinking. So, and side effects probably of bulimia were in there too. But they just, they don't say what the death is. And they get her body cremated, the family does, which is a decision that would haunt this town for years to come. Never heard of a cremation haunting a town. So this is kind of a Halloween episode. We have floating hands and we have a haunting cremation.
It totally is a Halloween episode. Right? You're right. Yeah, I like it.
So a few months later, Curtis, and notice how I just say a few months later. It was literally just like a few months later. He starts dating Erica. Okay. Erica. Let's jump right into Erica, shall we?
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think
you don't want to wait.
I think okay. I don't want to wait. I debated in all my right. head about waiting till Fashion Police, but it's really okay. not a Fashion Police. It is it's really not. Related to the episode.
It's a fake out Fashion Police.
Yeah. So yeah. Erica, we should say, was a student of Curtis's at this law thing he was teaching, but she's not a 19-year-old. She's no, only
she's 33.
She's only like four years younger than him. Right. So this was so part one of my second OMG moment of the episode is meeting Erica. At first, I was really confused. I was really scared. I felt very uncomfortable looking at her. I felt like she looked like a creepy crash test dummy or some sort of ventriloquist doll or something.
Oh, that's a good one.
Her makeup is very cakey. Her hair
I think
is,
you just think that when you see thick makeup. I think that's your no, natural it's reaction.
When, it's when it's thick makeup that looks a tad too light for their skin tone.
Oh. So me every day.
No.
Constantly.
No.
Well, I need to stop watching
Iggy Azalea every day.
Yeah. I need to stop watching foundation tutorials on YouTube. I'm obsessed. It's so stupid. I watch them over and over. Like, somehow foundation's just going to change the entire structure of my face. It's not. But I'm like, it is. No, it's not.
Wow, that seems like so much effort. I could really it's use so that. Dumb. But I really don't have the energy.
It's a time waster is what it is. Because then it's an hour later, and I learned how to contour something. But I don't...
Yeah, contouring.
Yeah, no, it's not really a thing for real people.
Oh, here. I thought it was.
I don't know. Yeah, if you listen to our podcast and you're a contour, send us a picture.
Yeah, a before and after, please.
And maybe a YouTube video. Okay, go ahead. Sorry, Erica Gomez.
She's wearing large glasses.
Yes.
Which, I don't, well, they could be cute on somebody.
They're hipstery.
Yeah. Her hair, it pretty much is just a wig, right? And looks like a wig. And
straight up.
Straight, like from, it looks
from
like
the
a,
jump.
Yeah. It looked like a wig from like a CVS, maybe. Had a wig section.
Right, no, it's an eBay wig.
The most disturbing part, the part that made me the most uncomfortable, her lipstick.
What was up with the lipstick?
It was only filled in part of the way.
Oh, no.
Like the middle part. So it was filled in to like here and then outside where there was still full-on lip had no lipstick on it. It was to make her lips look thinner, but you could still see the lip underneath with no lipstick on.
Who wants to do that?
Well, she does have, I think, large lips that make her more recognizable. So she was trying to tone. It would be like if Angelina Jolie only put in lipstick in the middle part of her lip, but you could see that there was a ton of lip outside.
So it's part of her disguise. The lipstick thing is like her trying to change the face of her shape, which should have been done with contouring.
There you go. Bring Full it all circle. Around. Yeah. Segue. Mm-hmm. So, so I was just really uncomfortable. Like a doll that you look at and you're like, that doll gives me the willies.
She looked like a human doll.
Yeah. She gave me the willies. Then they say they've altered her identity to protect her privacy. I wish they had told us earlier, because I, for a good 20 minutes, written all about crash test dummies. And then I find, that she was looking like that on purpose. That is not her day-to-day look.
Let me ask you a question. Would you just do the all black if you were trying to protect your privacy? Just have them film
you
know
what?
In shadow?
I was going to ask you, would you rather be on national TV and be involved in a murder case or wear that makeup. Crash test dummy makeup.
It just didn't work. Is the at the end of the day, it just didn't. It didn't really hide what she looked like.
Right. And that they were also using her name, right? Her real name.
They were using her name and they were using her voice. Dude, the blackout is so much less ridiculous. This looked ridiculous.
It did. And they kept having us having to see it in like normal settings. Like they had her do Folgers moments.
They did.
Looking out into space, just pondering life, holding a cup of coffee, looking like that. Probably scaring any pets that she had because they didn't recognize her. Okay, so should we finally move on from Erica?
Yes, please.
Erica met Curtis at a club, and he looked really out of place because she thought he was way older than he was.
Wait, I'm going to need you to say that again and say it the proper way. Thank you.
And at the club, why was Curtis there a few months after his wife died and he has four children at home? They don't ever discuss it. Why was he there? They start dating. She and her child move into the house and they get married. Curtis's only daughter, Lindsay, who looks so much like the mother, twinsies. She is kind of pissed about Erica moving in and thinks that it's weird and she's the new girlfriend and it's too soon. So she ends up moving out and moving in with her grandma.
Well, also, Lindsay's what? When she moves in, 13, yeah. Which is the worst age that you're going to switch something up like that. Yeah, she's a fresh teenager out of the oven. Yeah, no, it's not going to go
I'm
well.
I'm sorry. Oh.
I don't know. I've been using that a lot lately.
For a job at Subway?
I've been doing a lot of baking. I had to bake for my family reunion, which I'm going to bake you one of these things. I made Reese's peanut butter bars. Ooh. That I think you're really going to like.
Okay. I like that.
You got to wait for Hanukkah.
Okay.
Hanukkah.
Something to look forward to. Okay. So Curtis and Erica are happily married for a while. He is a pillar of the community. He continues to do like volunteer work. They serve together in the National Guard. It's pretty much everything that you can do that's communal. They do.
Anything he's like the head of the school board?
Yeah.
He's the guy. Well, yeah.
He's the guy. But they slowly start to grow distant and they start fighting a lot and they end up getting divorced. His next wife, wifey number three, Christine, who is kind of Betty Crocker, Martha Stewart-y, they have known each other since high school. They reconnect on Facebook and then they get married. She has a pie shop. Now, I know you were excited about the pie shop.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis asks, what is your go-to pie? Which tickled people on Twitter. They were just delighted by Dennis asking that.
And I liked it too.
Did you?
I did. I totally did. Because I wanted to know. And so I was like, please ask what her best pie is. And he did. And I was like, thank you, Dennis. You're enough. And we're on the same wavelength. I'm really happy.
Christine says that she makes a mean gooseberry pie, but she does it in this weird kind of flirty, like, I got you covered if you want to. Gooseberry pie.
Well, no, blueberry. Blueberry was her favorite, but then she also makes a mean gooseberry.
Which just, I don't know if I've ever had gooseberry. I wanted to call my mom and be like, have I ever had gooseberry? I was going to ask
Probably not.
Have you ever seen me have gooseberry? Do I even know what gooseberry is?
I don't know if gooseberry is a thing. I think the gooseberry pie is a mixture of berries. I could be dead wrong.
So we don't
think
gooseberry is actually a kind of berry.
I don't think gooseberry grows. I think gooseberry is a term for something else. But I also feel like when you throw in something like I make a mean gooseberry, it's obviously going to be a seasonal thing, right? It's going to be available for like 2 months out of the year. It's going to be everyone's going to want one. It's going to be people's favorite pie that they wait for all year round.
Do you think that this is epidemiology all over again?
96% chance that I made up all of what I just said. But now that I'm saying it out loud, I believe it even more. Okay. But I did put some time and thought into it.
But not enough to Google it to find out the right answer.
I was really busy trying to get outside information on this, which I did.
Okay, good. You are enough. So it's been a long time now since the murder. This kind of drove me crazy is they say 8 years, but then later they say it's been 7 years. I wanted to be their fact checker because I'm really particular about things like that. And it kind of drove me crazy. Has it been 7 years or 8 years?
Yeah, what's the timeline?
So it's now 2013, and this detective starts looking through old files, and he sees this case.
Which is 7 years.
Yeah, this one was 7 years. Earlier in the episode, they had said eight. I'm going to be really embarrassed if I'm wrong. The detective is looking at the autopsy photos and the pictures of her hands kind of frozen in death above her. And he thinks the rigor mortis is way too advanced for her having just died within the hour, which is what Curtis said happened, because he says she was alive when he went to drop the kids off. The original cop looks at the photos and agrees that something wasn't right and felt like he had missed something. And he couldn't believe that there wasn't an investigation. Now, I'm trying to think if I've literally ever heard a cop admit fault like this ever on a Dateline. Because usually it's excuses. But he is fully, we did something wrong. We missed something. He was my MVP right there. You got to admit when you make fault, and he did it. I was really impressed by that. So they decide to reopen the case, but they don't have a lot of work with because there was no investigation really the first time around, and her body has been cremated, which is why it haunted the town for years to come, I guess. So cops go to interview the neighbors. What are you looking up? You're barely paying attention to me. I could be saying anything right now. Are you looking up? No. Are you looking up YouTube videos on foundation work and contouring?
I looked up gooseberry.
What does it say?
It's totally a berry.
A real berry?
It is totally a real berry, but
that doesn't mean
it looks like it's hard to get. All right, I'm done. Sorry, I just wanted to.
We are so dumb.
Where does it even
We are
grow?
Really dumb.
Oh, Wikipedia's berry section is bullshit. upset. Oh, California. Okay, whatever. Keep going. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm closing.
Can
it.
I actually talk about the case now and you'll listen to me?
Yeah, sorry. I got it in my brain. I couldn't get rid of it. It had to be done. It had to be done right now.
Stuck in your craw. It was fresh baked in the oven. It had to be pulled out.
It was. The timer was going off. It was going to get burnt. All right, go.
So they interview the neighbors who say they used to fight constantly. Constantly. I would have moved. The cops interview the daughter who's now in college. And she says that her parents totally did fight and that it was a very interesting relationship. But she says her mom was up and awake that morning before the dad drove them to school. So she couldn't have been killed hours before. But they get a new pathologist to look at the photos, really, because there's no body. And she says that Corey was suffocated with a pillow, which was then later removed, which is why the hands are frozen and floating in midair. She thinks because of the rigor mortis that she was murdered the night before, like 9 o'clock the night before. She had been laying dead all night. Mm-hmm. So that totally goes against what the daughter said, which was that the mom was awake that morning. They arrest Curtis. He was supposed to be bringing his pie wife fried chicken for lunch at the pie shop. Did you think that was cute?
I thought it was cute because the way that she said it was, I had an inkling he was going to bring fried chicken that day. So he surprised her with what he brought her for lunch. And I thought that was really sweet.
I kind of it was cute. They bring the husband in. They also bring in the two boys, the two oldest boys. And they say they saw their mom alive that morning. The youngest boy says that the mom wasn't awake that morning, right? That he tried to watch TV with her, but she was not awake. She wouldn't wake up.
When did they say that?
I can't remember if it was in that part or another part.
Okay.
But all right. He said he used to crawl into bed with her and watch TV with her, but she wouldn't answer him that morning. But the two older boys say they saw their mom and she said goodbye to them when they were going off to school.
And then so when the mom came back upstairs, the youngest, the 4-year-old, would crawl into bed and watch TV with her.
Yes.
And then he said she wouldn't wake up.
Yes. She didn't answer him. Yeah.
Did he crawl into bed with her?
I don't know. Some people thought that he was saying he did, and some people thought he was calling to her from his room.
I just feel like that's really important.
Yeah, it
is. Because a 4-year-old is, anyways, we'll get to it.
The daughter, Lindsay, so she talks to her brothers the day her dad was arrested, and then she never talks to them again. And you kind of think they all died, But it turns out, like, I thought there was a car accident or something. Because it said, tragedy strikes this family again. It's like, what? Oh, my God. Yeah. She just becomes estranged from her dad and her brothers. But they're very vague. They say the family doesn't want to go into it, why they're not talking. Did you find out?
I did. A little bit.
A little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. Yep.
So Curtis is now on trial. Remember, he used to be the former assistant state's attorney, and now he's on trial for murder. It's ironic. So the prosecution says the day Corey died, Curtis never called 911. He called his boss when he found Corey dead. And the boss is like, should I call 911? Should we do that?
So weird.
Yeah.
Curtis, so he called the district attorney? Is that who he called?
I'm not sure. It could have been his boss at the school. It could have been. He had several jobs. So it could have.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah.
Okay.
Curtis also apparently knew CPR, but did not try to revive her. He instead drops the kid, the one kid that stayed home from school because he's too young, drops the kid off at grandma's house and says, oh, by the way, Corey's dead. Like, BT dubs, your daughter's dead. Peace out. Dennis thinks that is so weird. And I love when Dennis gets all matter of fact and he says, I have to say, I think that's very strange. I could not have loved Dennis more in that moment. It just made me so, he's just very, like, conversational. I have to say, I think that is very strange. Okay. The prosecutor says that Curtis was given preferential treatment because he was a big shot lawyer in the town. And that's why there wasn't more investigative work done. Lindsay takes the stand. She kind of struts into court with these red pants on. Did you see her strutting?
Yeah.
She says, this is a bombshell, that she now doesn't remember if she saw her mom that morning or not. I gave her the benefit of the doubt. People on Twitter were very mad at her. Mm. It was weird the way she described it. I just don't think she was accurately describing what was happening. Because we've talked a lot about childhood memories and false memories for kids. You know the story with the rabbit?
Yes.
So I think she had for years been telling the story that she saw the rabbit. And then one day she really sat down quietly and asked herself to remember the rabbit and realized she really couldn't remember the rabbit. She had just been parroting this story that she had seen the rabbit all those years.
Okay.
And that makes sense to me because I think she and the brothers could easily have remembered that day differently. Because we've learned about kids' memories are so easily manipulated.
That's true, but she's 12.
She was 12. That's true. So what, do you think she was doing it just to mess with the dad? Because she's mad at the dad?
I find it really suspicious that she remembers so clearly in such detail being called to the principal's office, how she was told that her mother died, being taken home, then going back to school. She knows that story. She has that down. So I do find it suspect that suddenly she can't remember, especially because it was Valentine's Day. And there was talk about the mom helping get together these Valentine's bags that they take to their classmates, stuff like that. If it was a normal day, I kind of get it. But because there was extra stuff going on that morning, I don't know.
She kind of says she blocked it out, which is odd that you would block out the part before finding out your mom was dead, but not
what would be black was the part after, right? Would be the part that she is telling.
Well, no,
the full
I would
story
no.
About.
When someone's in a really bad car accident, it's not just the car accident; it's usually the whole day before. Sometimes, like 3 days before the accident, that are blocked out.
But so she suddenly remembers just being told that her mom died, and then everything after that, and then blocked out the really critical part of the morning.
I don't know.
Yeah.
She says, the way she describes it, though, is kind of terrible because she says, no one sincerely asked me. And that's why she hadn't really thought about it.
Because a police interview is, they weren't sincere?
It wasn't serious enough. Or did she feel like they were disingenuous in the way they were asking? I just don't think sincerely is not the right word.
No, so, it's not.
No. The prosecutor does think that the boys' stories were kind of influenced by the dad because he had sole custody of them right up after the murder. and they weren't interviewed for a few days after the murder. So that's plenty of time to have the dad kind of talk to them about when the mom was getting breakfast ready and when the mom was seeing them that morning.
Right.
So now it's the two sons versus the pathologist who said she was killed the night before. Mm-hmm. But I keep remembering how the cop at the scene said her belly was warm.
Right.
But the dad, Curtis, said she was cold.
He did, but that was in a much later interview.
Right.
That was in the interview when, I mean, when he's being called in 8 years after the fact when he's indicted.
But he again, says she was cold. Truth usually doesn't change. Details like that don't usually change.
But I feel like if somebody, when someone's dead, the way that they look cold. So he probably just he could have just very easily associated it in his head. No, she was dead, stiff, cold, because those are the things that you think about when you think about a dead body.
Right.
But I mean, the person whose story I would take on that is the person who actually touched the body, the investigator that came in and touched the body after, right? They would remember.
Well, hopefully they wrote it down in a report.
Right.
If they had actually taken the temperature, then a lot of that would be resolved.
Did they not?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Did you have to?
I thought so. And then, Well, we'll get into that later. But I did look at rigor mortis. It starts, the body starts stiffening 2 to 3 hours after they die. Right. So she would not be stiff at this point. She would have barely begun to stiffen. She would have
just started having rigor mortis.
Just started. The body doesn't get very stiff until 12 to 24 hours. And the body only gets cold 1.5 degrees every hour. So to be actually considered cold would be 12 hours.
But she wasn't cold.
But
I do believe that she was not cold.
The midsection takes the longest to feel cold, which I thought was interesting.
Interesting.
So
all right.
The defense attorney totally disses the original cop. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this? He says he was on K-9 patrol. And then he says he was investigating crimes against seniors.
Right.
And then he says he only did a 1 week course on being a lead detective in a homicide case. There's a course? Is it like an Excel workshop?
Is it an online course?
Can I take it? Is it like
be your own best detective?
I want to take it. The defense also points out that Corey drank a lot and fell down a lot and was bulimic. The trial is a mistrial. It's 6 guilty, 6 not guilty. Curtis doesn't want to take a deal that will put him in jail for 13 years. So they're fighting. They're going to go to trial again. They're broke. But Christine, his new wife, begs this civil rights lawyer who is Andy Dick, without a doubt. He is Andy Dick.
Yes.
I think it was Andy Dick.
If you were wondering where Andy Dick went, that's, we found him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, he's a civil rights lawyer, and this is his first murder trial ever.
But what does he do on the side? He does, in Wrongfully Imprisoned? What's that called?
Yes, he is the Innocence Project type stuff.
Right, exactly. Also, by the way, can we just talk really quick about Shades of Serial in this episode? It was so interesting because we had to go into body position and time of death and being stiff and all that stuff, which is, if you listen to Undisclosed, which is the supplement to Serial, it goes into that, like, full episodes dedicated to rigor mortis. It's pretty good.
Ooh, I never got past the first episode of that. Not Serial. Don't yell at me, people. I listened to Serial. Undisclosed.
It was good. I really liked it.
Okay. The neighbors heard constant arguing, including this total looky-loo neighbor who was walking by, which is BS. I think she was just listening at their door. The night before, she thought maybe someone was in distress. There was so much yelling. So that's why she listened. Not just because she's totally curious about what's going on in their marriage.
That is total malarkey. That's ridiculous.
It's malarkey. But Curtis had specifically told the cops that there was no fight the night before. So he's already lying. But that could just be a husband lying so he doesn't seem to be guilty.
Why do you think there was a fight the night before?
Because I believe the neighbors who said there was constant yelling.
You believe the neighbors?
100%.
I believe the neighbors that there was constant yelling, but I believe him that there wasn't a fight the night before.
Oh, really?
Or I believe that maybe they had a quick raised voices thing, but it wasn't a fight. Couples know their levels of fighting. So in Curtis's head, it probably wasn't a fight like they've had fights. It was probably just a few minutes of like, I don't feel good. Well, blah, blah, blah. You know, a few seconds. That's the quick
If fight. You're that sick, you don't have the energy to yell.
Well, we'll get into the sick portion.
I believed the nosy neighbor who really heard a fight.
With the short blonde hair?
Yeah. She's taken a walk before Valentine's Day. The next day there's ambulance at the house. She would remember. I heard them fighting the night before.
She's my loser, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. I was very unhappy. She made
that
with her.
Very little impression on me that I would.
I was cranky.
Okay.
I feel like she's a nosy Nelly.
I feel like it's helpful.
Oh my gosh. You're a nosy Nelly.
Well, I really wish there was more excitement around my complex.
There's nothing really, that happens in your nothing complex. Nothing happens. Yeah,
I never
really
get to hear fighting. So the forensic scientist that we have seen a million times before, Werner Spitz, the guy with the accent who's German or something.
Yeah.
He has we've seen him so many times on all of the crime shows.
It's him and Lee. Lee's the other one. Dr. Yeah. Lee. Yeah, it's always them.
Spitz worked on the JFK investigation, the MLK investigation, the CA, Casey Anthony investigation. And I think, was he in the JBR, JonBenet Ramsey investigation on CBS?
No, that
CBS?
Was Lee. That was Lee.
Are you sure?
I'm positive, because Lee was OJ, and I think Lee was JonBenet. Yeah. Also, okay. Keep in mind, all these people are paid, you know?
Yes. Oh, I'm fully aware.
Okay. All right.
Yes. Just saying. No, I don't really trust this guy.
Yeah.
This was when, though, in the second trial, we get part two of my second OMG moment. Cameras are allowed in the courtroom, unlike the first trial. We actually get to see Erica. So Erica, who looked like a creepy crash test dummy in her own house drinking Folgers and interviewed on Dateline in the worst makeup and wig situation with the lipstick, scared me to death for nothing. Because now she's fully on the stand with no disguise. I was just, what? But apparently, Dateline tries to defend her on Twitter and says that she didn't know that the second trial was going to be televised or filmed. And the interview in the disguise was done before.
That's what I was curious about. So the interview with the disguise was done between the two trials?
Yes.
Or something like that?
Yes. I don't know if she was, like, not allowed a disguise on the stand.
No, you're not.
But you can't request to just not be filmed?
No, you can't. If there are cameras allowed in the courtroom, that's it. The judge decided. So you have no say in it. You're a witness.
And
no.
You can't decide if Dateline airs that footage.
Dateline was in the courtroom. Dateline was allowed in by the court. Dateline and 48 Hours and all the people. Yeah.
Well, that just seems unfair.
Well, I think she probably just feels like a moron. Because now all of her... Wouldn't you have just done your Dateline interview again and been like, can I come back and do this again? I need a redo. Dress like a normal person because this is a nightmare.
That's very funny. I could see that. So Erica says that their marriage was not peaches and cream. She said that alcohol was involved and that he would get violent grabbing at her. The grabbing at her was a little weak. It was like he ripped her shirt and he just kept grabbing at her.
I don't understand. Yeah.
I just didn't. Not that that's not abuse. I'm not trying to diminish. But
she's not believable.
She came off as just crazy.
Yeah.
And kind of lying.
Yeah. She did. Now, and this is before the defense has a crack at her. She came off as lying to me. Yeah.
Yes. So her big thing is that he kind of confessed to her what she says. He kind of confessed to her about killing Corey. He says one time he was drunk and he says she was writhing underneath me and then says, oh, I mean the black cat. What? Wait, did... Either way, this is bad because he's either saying he murdered Corey or he murdered a black cat.
I think it was way... It felt like a childhood memory that he had somehow been stuck.
Was wrestling with a cat?
Who knows? Or he was a toddler and got put down on a cat? Who knows? I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know.
So you did not believe that he said it and that it had to do with Corey?
I think he may have said it, but I think it had nothing to do with Corey.
I... don't really believe Erica, but I believe if it was someone else, I maybe would have believed her. But then the prosecutor starts saying writhing a lot, and then I got uncomfortable. So this is when we, the on the stand, when she gets cross-examined, Erica, is this is when we find out what a true gift Erica really is, that Dateline has given us this gift wrapped up in a little bow, and that is Erica. Erica says she had filed a complaint against Curtis, but when they investigated it, it was found out to be an accident. She's like, he accidentally grabbed me, and it was totally unfounded. And then all of a sudden on the stand, she just kind of goes crazy, where she's just like saying words. She says, that's not real. Somebody put those words in there. Those words shouldn't be there. That should have my signature in there.
What is she talking about?
And then she says, Curtis knows how to forge documents, and he stole her social security card, and then he stole her daughter's bike from the garage. He stole a girl's bike? What? Then she just loses it, and she's crying, but she's like, I can't breathe. But it's really weird and fake, no tears.
Not a nary a tear.
No, she's like a weird wind-up doll who's just has a spark shortage in it. And it's just making all these different emotions all at once, because she's crying, and then she's fine, and then the tears are gone. There were no tears. And then she says he was poisoning her. Okay. Bring it on. Okay. Your hair was falling out. Okay. You had white lines on your nails or something. Okay. And you didn't feel well, and you thought it was in your orange juice, but you never went to the doctor because it wouldn't have mattered. Okay. Thank you, Dateline, for Erica.
She was a gift.
She was the new Bonnie. She was the new Michelle. She was the new Sheila Davalou. Because I think even the prosecution, I think, kind of thinks we really effed up by putting her on the stand. I think
that was a huge mistake.
It was a huge mistake. Did you not interview her yourself and see what the things that she was going to say and how she was going to say them? If it was someone else, again, I would be like, oh, my God, he tried to poison her. And instead, I'm like, oh, my God, she's nuts. It made me not believe anything she was saying, even though it could all be true. She could be crazy and he could have done all that stuff. But
she's just totally
nuts. It makes me not believe it. This is, I guess, what Dateline feels like is the OMG moment, is when this EMT first responder testifies. He, for some reason, has a thicker accent than anyone else in this entire town. And he admits that he moved Corey's arms. He's the one who put them up like that to do the EKG machine to check for a pulse.
Well, he said they were up.
I thought he said they were down.
Up, like resting. No, they were up resting on her chest. That's why he had to move them.
That makes sense.
Up resting on her chest.
Okay, so they weren't floating. Were here.
They were not floating. No.
Although that makes more sense, because Curtis had said that her arms were like that when he found her. So
yeah, he said her arms were up. He didn't mean floating. He meant they were up. They weren't
that makes sense.
Flat down.
Yeah. I thought the EMT said they were down. That makes sense. Mm-mm. But he doesn't really say how much rigor there was. And he was testing for rigor. And we needed to know that. Because I've learned all about it. I'm a professional now. Because I went on Wikipedia. And I know about rigor.
You took a detective course.
A 1 week. Mine was 1.5 weeks. It was 10 days. And that's 2 weeks, actually. Got an A+. I got a gold star. One of those
You're
stickers.
You're a certified forensic scientist now.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Okay, now Curtis takes a stand. And then he starts crying. Totally crying like Erica was crying. Like, I don't think there were tears. And he's really only crying about how long the trial has been and how stressful it's been on the family.
He had tears. He was actually crying. If you're comparing his crying to Erica's, you're wrong.
Okay, but did you feel like he was not at all crying about his dead wife and only crying about that the trial had been very hard on his family?
Well, yeah, because that's what they were asking him about. I think he cried whenever they brought up his sons, he started crying. From what I gathered on outside information, too, whenever the sons were like, they talked about how hard it was on them, he sort of can't keep it together.
Okay, so he does love his sons.
He does.
So this part was kind of weak. I don't think he was a very good testifier. I don't know. Do you think it helped his case to testify and to cry like
yes.
that?
Yes. Yes. I think that the jury ultimately at the end of the day wants to hear from the person accused.
They do. And they usually don't take the stand. So it was probably good. But I just didn't like when the prosecutor said, you're saying the detective is lying. You're saying your second wife is lying. You're saying the pathologist is lying. And Curtis was like, it's up to them to say who's lying. What? Stick by your story. Say, yes, that is what I'm saying.
Yes,
they are lying. He's like, right. I don't know. Every man has his own truth. So,
oh, sweet just, baby Jesus.
Yeah, could, I don't know. They may think
Curtis
they're telling
Mark
the truth
Twain.
In their heart.
He's pulling a Mark Twain. It's good. All right.
So he is found not guilty after only 2 hours of deliberation. Just kind of crazy. And we end the episode with tons of Folgers moments. We have the daughter drinking coffee, and she's very sad that she's estranged from her brothers. We have Curtis and his current Betty Crocker wife drinking coffee with the biggest Beethoven dog I've ever seen. I want it so badly. They don't deserve that dog. I deserve that
dog.
Yes,
they do. Christine deserves that dog. That dog, I mean, her husband's in jail. She got a big old St. Bernard.
It's she did because he said he went home to a dog he didn't know. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem like something you would even mention if it was Griffey. Someone would be like, oh, yeah, she has a dog because he's 9 pounds. It doesn't make that much of an impact. But then when you see the dog, you're like, I see why he mentioned I came home to a dog I didn't know. Because that dog is literally 200 pounds of dog.
It's a person.
In their house.
Exactly what I thought.
That
I
dog
like,
takes up the whole length of
the
couch.
The dog.
Yeah. That's a giant dog. And but I want that dog. So they are now suing the state for interviewing the sons without parental permission and saying they falsely imprisoned the sons while they were being interviewed, which is kind of funny. But they are probably going to get some money out of it. They have moved to another town, and they are starting businesses to help wrongfully accused people. She has a Twitter page for her business. It is like Voice for Innocence or something.
We should follow her.
Should we?
Yeah. See what she's
up to. I think
we
have very different opinions on them.
Probably.
So there's a few moments I kind of wanted to mention. Do you have things you want to mention? Do you want to do outside moments?
It's up to you. Do you know the sons' names really quick?
Larson.
Yep.
The daughter's Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Are they all L's?
They're all L's. It's Larson, Logan, Lincoln, and Lindsay. Just wanted to... I feel like that changes my... It subtly changes my view of the family.
I wonder where L came from. L must have been a relative who passed away.
No, it's Lovelace. So it all matches the last name. Lindsay Lovelace, Logan Lovelace, Larson Lovelace.
That's a mistake because it sounds like a porn name.
Well, I know. I don't think they thought about it. Lindsay Lovelace sounds a lot like Linda Lovelace.
It really does. Right? It happens. You're not really thinking when you just had a child.
Yes. But let's talk about why Lindsay isn't speaking to the rest of the family.
Please, that's all I want to know.
Okay, so I watched an interview with her with a local Illinois police station. She was interviewed one time before the first trial and then again before the second trial. So the one that I watched was before the second trial. And apparently there were some sort of rumors that were happening that Lindsay played a big part in why the investigation started in the first place into her father.
Oh.
It's a small town. So there were a lot of rumors that Lindsay had sort of gotten the ball rolling on that.
See, and they made it seem like she was more an innocent kind of... They happened to need her to be a witness, but they weren't, she wasn't the driving force behind it.
But I think maybe there was an incident or something that happened that I could not find that did sort of keep the investigation going. And so the brothers believe that.
So they blame her.
They blame her. And so for the father being arrested, all of it. And so the interesting thing that she said is she said when she saw her brothers in court, she started crying. And I guess there's one point in the first trial that after Logan or one of them is on the stand, she runs out crying. She runs out of the courtroom crying. And the reporter talked about that. And Lindsay said, I just felt so bad because I'd spent all my life protecting them and I couldn't protect them anymore. Which leads me to the biggest thing that I want to talk about, which is Corey's being an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a lot worse than what we're seeing.
Corey,
here.
Not Curtis.
Corey, the mom. I think her being sick that day was not really sick. I think that sick is mom's on a bender, and she's falling downstairs and doing stuff. I think that it sort of clicked with me when Lindsay said that she'd protected her brothers. I'm like, well, she was protecting them because her mom's an alcoholic.
See, I assumed she was protecting them something bad about the dad.
And like, it could be the dad too. If the dad was an alcoholic too, then yeah.
So you think just the mom was always on benders and one of those crazy erratic alcoholics.
Yeah, I think things had gotten progressively worse.
Make their kids' lives miserable. Yeah.
Because when she was found, her blood alcohol was 0.049, which I think is kind of high when she was tested when she died.
I think that's below the legal limit, isn't it?
But there was the weird thing is there's no alcohol found.
But she was dead.
There was no alcohol found in her urine or in her eye fluid, which were both tested.
Ew.
And so alcohol appears in your urine and your eye fluid 30 minutes after you drink. So basically she had died very shortly after taking her last drink. Like that would have been present if she had had a drink like 2 hours before, but she had had a drink pretty quick before she died, which is bad because that's also 8 o'clock in the morning,
right?
So I think it was really a serious alcohol problem
and not like a stomach flu.
No, I think it was a really serious alcohol problem that made her sick combined with bulimia.
The family is very Christian and religious and upstanding members of society, so it makes sense.
They're Christian.
Yes. Christine has
that.
It on her page. Yeah.
Oh.
Like proud Christian. So, and they're upstanding members of the community. So it makes sense that they would hide the alcohol problem.
Yeah, it's the classic, right? Yeah, yeah. You hide it from everyone. It would also make sense they were fighting all the time if they're both drinking so much.
Can we talk then about the most important part of the episode?
Which is?
Wolf pups.
Yeah. What is a wolf pup and where do I get one?
I thought it was like dire wolves. I
immediately
thought of Ghost and Lady. And why are there wolf pups? I don't know, but I want them.
I don't know.
Why are they at the school?
Well, it was obviously divine intervention that she would get to hold wolf pups on the day her mom died. That would be the most comforting thing in the world.
It would. It's like a comfort golden retriever, but instead it's a wolf. Before it gets to be all scary, murderous wolf. It's a baby wolf. Okay, my last thing I have to bring up, I don't know if you noticed, there is a moment when the prosecutor is being interviewed at the very end, and there is this little bug that is flying around his face.
No, I totally didn't notice. Oh,
my
God.
I rewound it four times to make sure it wasn't on my TV screen.
Oh my
gosh. It is not on my TV screen. You see it over his glasses. I can't tell if it's like a reflection or if it's literally flying around his face and he just wants to shoo it off. They are inside. I don't know why the bug is there or why they just didn't reshoot that part. He wasn't saying anything particularly, like, he could have just repeated it without the bug flying in his face.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. But it really, you think it's on your TV screen.
That's...
Quote of the week?
Yes.
We have, all that changed when a man in a windowless room a few blocks from the Mississippi found himself with spare time on his hands. I mean, they paint a picture.
They really do. It makes it seem like he's a nosy Nelly.
He was in a windowless room with nothing to occupy his time.
Yeah, that's true.
But a computer filled with old cases. You would dig into them too.
Yeah, but like looking for something that he could make a name for himself.
Baloney. No, that is not how I got it at all.
He
was bored and he was digging into old cases and he sees one that was the old district prosecutor person. He's like, what? He was charged with murder? What? Or his wife died? I'm looking into this case. There's no windows in this room, so I can't see the old Mississippi outside. Why did they never go, like, on the old Mississippi?
I don't know. Yeah, why don't they do, what's it called? References to Showboat.
Yes.
The musical. That'd be great. Old Man River.
Keeps on rolling. Oh, well, this is perfect. My second quote of the week. Big dreams on a mighty river can carry you far, or they can drag you under.
Whoa.
Right?
I like that one. I missed that one. That's good.
That's good.
Wait, I had a classic Dateline. There were so many coffee drinking moments in this. Oh, God. I think there were upwards of 10 from almost everyone.
Everyone in this town, I saw a couple staring out windows. I saw a couple just staring into space. Just standing.
The last one is Curtis. Is Curtis looking up from a book to stare into space? It was pretty good. Yeah, he was reading Gone Girl and just contemplating what was happening. And then my other classic Dateline moment. I don't know if you noticed, but Dateline keeps sneaking him in. But we had a random interview in this.
And not the neighbors?
No, because those were really the police. That was really the courtroom footage.
Wait, that we was saw there the a friend at the beginning?
There was
that totally like, went away.
Just like last week, we had a friend Beth, who's in maybe the first five minutes, and she is a friend of Corey and Curtis's from high school.
And she is useless.
Completely useless. Just saying how they were sort of fun-loving in high school. Literally nothing.
That is it. That is all. Yeah. And then she's gone forever.
And then she's gone forever. Just like last week, the random friend that we had. So I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're testing out a thing to try to throw us off track. Like, oh, she's going to be important. Beth is going to have a big role to play.
I have two theories. One is they think maybe she'll have some explosive news, like on Cold Justice, they interview 5 million people and they're always like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And then one person will say one thing, like interviewing the EMT. And he's like, oh, yeah, I moved the arms. And can you imagine their faces when they're like, I'm sorry, you moved the arms?
What? Yeah,
that is what the entire case is built on. No one has released this info. What? So they're hoping for something like that. Two, the Dateline crew has a bunch of interns and they want to give them film experience. So they have them go interview people like the friends. And then they put in the footage just to make them feel good.
How is that not? Oh, they do. Okay.
Just that's be like, look, your footage made it on. It's totally integral to the plot of the episode.
It's so not. And why don't you have Beth on later? Because I found it interesting. Corey and Curtis met in high school. So Christine also knew Corey, knew the original wife.
100%.
The third wife knew it. And I would like to know more about that.
Yes.
Were Corey and Christine friends? Is this more of a scandal?
Right.
Irritating.
Because not only did you marry someone whose wife died, you knew her in high school. I'm assuming because that's weird.
It's weird. All right. Sorry. What else do you have?
I didn't really do an MVP loser. I liked cop who said there was a mistake.
Mm-hmm. I liked the mom. I liked Marty a lot. But
she was great.
Marty was also my OMG moment, by the way. Because at the very, very end of the episode, they're only showing Marty the entire time. And then all of a sudden at the very end, there's someone sitting next to her.
That's her son?
Literally.
Yes. He what barely got to talk. I believe he's a dentist. He's was Corey's brother and maybe is there just for emotional support since the dad died.
But then don't show him because it's like all of a sudden and it's clear that it's the same interview because her sweater hasn't changed. The position in the room hasn't changed. It's
just you were there
her.
The whole time.
And then all of a sudden there's a guy next to her. I was like, wait, what? Who? That was amazing.
I thought you were
going to
say that at the end when she refuses to say what she thinks happened. Because
I liked that too.
She's like
keeping it right here. She's keeping it tight in her little heart pocket.
She's keeping it baking in her oven. And she's not going to pull those cookies out yet. She has thoughts about what happened to her daughter. But she thinks there's no point in saying them. She's going to keep them. And people can draw their own conclusions. I thought that was... Mm-hmm. What about Joan Rivers' fashion police?
All I had was the scarves. Christine and the scarves her neck like a flight attendant the entire time. And I just... Either she was trying to be from France. She was either going
like
Sophie, a French look.
Who makes Louvre to the microphone.
She was Louvre? Yeah, no. It was almost... It was either she was doing sort of a cutesy French thing or there was something wrong with her neck. I saw a picture where she has like a lower thing on in my outside research. There's nothing wrong with her neck. She's wearing the scarves as a fashion choice.
I was very confused also by Christine, not just the scarves, but she had really short hair for like two clips at the very end and then has long hair again.
Oh, I didn't understand that at all.
What was happening? She must have cut her hair
no.
right after, and then they were like, we need more footage of you guys. And she's like, now I have very short hair.
No, timeline on this episode has made me crazy.
Yeah. No, because that was when they had moved towns. It was way off. It was after the trial. They had moved towns and were working on...
And she had short hair?
Very short hair.
So after. When were those initial interviews with her with the long hair must have been done around the first trial. Dateline must have been wanting to release this episode after the first trial and then had to wait a year for the second trial.
That's possible. Or literally she just cut her hair when they moved towns after the second trial.
They had years of footage of these people then.
Right.
Because what all of a sudden
yes.
we have some footage, but 90% of the footage is her with long hair.
Yes.
But it was confusing.
It was very confusing. So, better titles.
Wait, no alternative theories?
I mean, I think that, I don't know. Maybe Lindsay did it.
I said the neighbors. Why do you always go for the child? Not always the child. I think it's the neighbors.
You think the neighbors killed her?
Yeah, they were sick of the fighting. They were sick of it. And they snuck in and they waited for their time. And they were like, we're going to make this look. Also, we're going to make this look like a suffocation. I have issues with the fact that they say she was suffocated because there are things that happen when you're suffocated. There's oxygen raised in your blood levels. Your eyes do that petechia thing.
Right.
And they didn't bring up any. And maybe they did bring it up in the trial, but I could not find evidence that they had brought that up.
I think there wasn't a thorough investigation. Or a thorough autopsy. So
you're right.
They maybe just didn't check a lot of
that stuff.
They just
didn't have the information. And then also cuts in the mouth could easily be bulimia. It could easily be a lot to do with
other things. Or really anything. I bit my tongue. Yeah. I bit my lip the other day eating. And I had totally had a cut in my mouth. So that could have been other things. Not that I think he's innocent. I still think he could have done it. But I don't think it's conclusive.
Go along with being smothered.
Right.
Like a lot of times you get blue lips. Yeah. Things happen. Tell me your alternative titles right this minute.
Okay. Valentine's Day Massacre of One. Because it's not really a massacre, but it was one person. The Floating Arm of the Law. No. So. You like?
It is.
The Hands of Justice Move Slowly. The Floating Arms of Death.
That's good. I like the Floating Arms of Death.
A Slice of Murder.
Ooh.
Because of the pies.
Yeah, that's good. I was trying to come up with a pie one. That's good.
Pushing Daisies, Dateline Edition. Because Pushing Daisies took place in a pie shop.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yes, it did. You didn't watch Pushing Daisies?
No, I didn't. Also, I'm
You're
again
gonna get
writing...
in trouble. Just like I got in trouble for not watching Schitt's Creek.
People got mad at you?
Cindy did.
Good. She should get mad at you. Yeah. You should know.
So I started also, I started it this week. Okay, and then my last one is the cremation that haunted a town.
That's great.
I like it. Okay,
this was a very Halloween episode. Mine are not that great this time. I'm disappointed in myself because I felt like I had a lot to work with, but still, it's okay. I had Loveless Marriage.
That's good. That's simple and beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't do puns, but that's really good.
And then I had Gin and Toxic.
Ooh.
Because that was what she had in the white cup by her bed. Mm-hmm. It was Gin and Tonic. I like it. And then I have my real favorite, which is, will the real rigor mortis please stand up?
Oh my.
Okay, a little bit. That's a Drag Race reference because Alyssa Edwards at one point says, "Oh girl, you got rigor mortis." And she doesn't rigor know mortis? That it's yeah, she doesn't know that it's rigor mortis.
Uh-huh.
And so
like yig yag.
So I made rigor mortis a person. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, that's all I got. But that's
wow.
That's it. Okay. Was Adam Swiderski on Twitter this week?
No. I know.
He's on vacation. He's on a cruise or something.
Or he's mad at us. I don't know what he's doing with his life.
He's playing games. He's playing games.
He's playing games with our hearts. Yeah.
He's a player.
I don't like it.
He's a player. Like, what's his name from last week? Who was the player last week?
Dave?
Yeah.
Him?
Dave. Krupa was a player.
Sam the Nicole, Andy Dick killing it pro bono for the defense tonight. So many people agreed with me that it was Andy Dick. Erica Fisher 881, I hope you guys have HD TV because this high def TV because Erica is a true blessing to my eyes in HD. I don't think you noticed the lipstick. You need the high def to see the full effect of the lipstick.
Yeah, maybe I do. I'll go watch it on the TV.
Please go watch the lipstick.
I will go see it.
Bobby Nenggg, who's the woman who stole Katy Perry's new look? The pathologist. Several people thought she was Katy Perry. Mavo 1210. Wow, they landed spits. I can't tell if she's being sarcastic.
That's hilarious.
Or if she's being serious. I mean, he is a really big deal. But
the whole town's budget is gone for the year.
They landed spits. Can you believe it? They got spits.
For $20,000 a day. Right.
But I couldn't tell if she was actually impressed or if she was making fun of how excited. They always just list his credits, too. Every time he takes the stand, he has to be like JFK and Martin Luther King. And I did this and I have this. I've been in the business for 75 years. And yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Fredo Rap, leave number two alone. She's always wanted to be a blonde. That was funny. Oh, George Albert again. Wife number three is blinded by 30 years of pining away for Kurt. So that really made me think about what you had said. They did go to high school together. And if she had a crush on him in high school but never got to date him, but always liked him, that would explain a lot of this like blind loyalty towards him. Imagine like this star of the football team that everyone in the town knows. You have a crush on him. You finally get to marry him.
Yeah.
Oh, and you're the stepmom to his kids. You are now think he's the sun and the moon.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, it does. Jane Minty, four down in Dateline Bingo. Mid-America. That's one of her choices. Football star / homecoming king. Twofer. That's a good one. Because there are several episodes with the star of the football team.
Always.
In quotes, pillar of the community. Mm-hmm. They love a pillar of the community. Mm-hmm. And looks 10 years older than actual age. I think I told her we're totally going to steal those because I really like all of those. Kendra Smith, wife number two came for the Oscar and nothing less with a gif of NeNe Leakes doing the snapping.
Yes.
She did. She went on that stand thinking, I am going to steal this whole show.
Yeah,
this is all about me now.
Uh-huh. Cameras are here. I'm ready. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Watch me cry. Mm-hmm. Watch me nay nay.
Yeah.
Watch me cry.
Rebecca Crook. Rebecca Crook. Okay, Erica, did he shoot JFK as well? Redheaded Scott. You guys, I'm starting to believe Erica isn't entirely reliable. Sarah Holmes. Well, I don't like Curtis's fake crying either. She's just upset about everyone. Dabuni 2, fried chicken for lunch, and you aren't here? I'm calling you. Where is my damn fried chicken? Hashtag you better be in jail.
That was brilliant. That's perfect.
DSB 5566, Christine, your airline called and wants all of their scarves back.
See, I was right.
Mm-hmm. HM Montez, I don't know if Curtis killed his wife, but I'm pretty sure Erica is crazy. That seemed to just be the general consensus. We really don't know what happened, but we can all agree on Erica.
Yes.
And
he even said she was a rebound. It was a mistake.
Yes. And the final one, redheaded Scott. Okay, someone tell the truth. Is this woman's head going to roll off or something if she removes the neckerchief? Is it a full-on Ichabod Crane? Which brings it...
Which brings us full circle to a Halloween episode.
Halloween. Yes. She is nearly headless Nick.
A jack-o'-lantern head.
Yeah, oh, and this is so the only good thing keeping it on.
Oh, yeah, that's good. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. So I think that's all we have for today.
Nothing in the news? We didn't miss any other cookouts or anything else?
God, you're so bitter.
I'm so upset.
It's not a good look on you.
I can be hurt. I can own that I'm hurt.
They sent us swag, which we still haven't revealed the pictures of.
They did.
They've been sending a lot of people swag, though. I hate to break it to you.
Okay, we can't talk about this anymore. No. Is The Bicycle Thief, is that a book?
Yeah. Why?
Okay, that would just be another good alternative title for this. Didn't Erica say he stole her daughter's bike?
Yes.
Yeah.
The little girl's bicycle from the garage. Oh, yeah. That's so good. Okay, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Oh, we're going to have some new segments on Facebook. Make sure you find our bingo on our website. The link is on Facebook, but it's also just Google us and you'll find it.
I'll make another post about the bingo so people can find it.
Yeah. Subscribe and write us a review on iTunes. And don't watch alone. Watch in your nice underwear just in case.
Good one. Bye, everybody.
Bye.